Hi, and thanks for joining me today on today's episode of Thrive, Not Just Survive. All right, I'm glad you're joining me today. This is our first episode of the new show called Thrive, Not Just Survive. For those of you who know me, I've been on the show Breaking Free from Churchianity, which was my second book. And so I did a show over that. It's also a podcast. You can get that online. Or you can see the videos on YouTube or Gann TV. But this show is called Thrive, Not Just Survive, How to Live from Within. And I'm excited about this next step because in our ministry, one of the things that we do is we start working with people to make peace with their past. And that's based on the book, my first book that I wrote, which is called Alignment of Authentic Love. And then the second part is helping them make peace with religion, deconstructing their faith and trying to determine what it is they actually believe so they can come to some sort of inner peace about it. This was from the book Breaking Free from Churchianity. And then this third part is How to Thrive, Not Just Survive. And this is about how to live from within. The name of the book is Thrive, Not Just Survive. It's up there on your screen. And you can get this at Amazon. I encourage you to buy it because we're going to be using that as a resource. I use this as a resource with my clients. That's why I wrote it. It's also for those who just want to buy it and find out more about what we teach, what we're about. All three books are helpful, but it is a complete process. Now, we're in time going to be putting this online, so you'll be able to go through it yourself if you want, just like our clients do in the spiritual coaching practice. But this part of it is something that I've never really taught before. So this is all new material for me, and I'm really looking forward to doing that here on this this new show. You know, so many people I know, especially those who call themselves Christians. And I don't really define myself that way anymore as a Christian. I'm a follower of the way, because that's really what they were called in the early days. They were called followers of the way. The way of what? The way of love. The way Christ lived. These people lived like he lived, in power. And they did it in a way that was unexplainable. And so they called them followers of the way. They weren't legalistic. They weren't following after the law. They were following after a higher power, which was the Spirit of God living within them. And so this was what they were called, and that's what I wanted to find myself as. Christians come to mean a lot of things in today's very fragmented world. And I think follower of the way of Jesus, the way of love, the way of compassion, of empathy, that is the way of the new covenant, the way of inner spirit, inner life, is what we're going to be focused on. And so this really is where we go deep. We go from looking outward to going inward. We go to love from fear. We go to empathy from judgment. We go to grace from law. We go inward to a finished work, to a reality of our higher self, an awareness of that self, to be able to listen to the Spirit, to live intuitively each moment. You live in intuitively, you just know the truth of a situation each moment. You know how to live each moment. You don't need a book to do that. You know what to do in the moment. This is where we're going. And learning to live in the moment, learning to contemplate, learning to listen, and then to express that back to the Spirit so that the Spirit can then manifest it out into the world. See, that's the spiritual life. Spiritual life isn't going out into the world to find something, bring it in, and hopefully it helps me inside. No, you already have everything that you need inside of you. That's going to be the one thing that I constantly talk about is you are enough right now. Why? You're one with the divine life. You're in the divine life. Everything Christ did has to do with that divine life that you were brought into in oneness. Okay, so to do this, we're going to have to first make sure that we have begun to deconstruct things that hold us back. Now, if you've read my first book, and I hope you have, and if you haven't, I encourage you to get it and read it and begin to go through the deconstruction process yourself. Because apart from that, what happens is we aren't very open-minded. And I'm gonna bring up a lot of stuff to you in the weeks and months ahead that you've never heard before. I'm gonna say some things that you've never heard before. This is new material. And so I dare say in most churches, they're not talking about this, but you're gonna hear it. And if you don't have an open mind, in other words, if you haven't trusted the Spirit of God living within you to take care of you so you can listen to something new and different rather than being afraid of it, then it's not going to benefit you much. So this requires us really looking at our inner life in the sense of what we believe. What is it that we've held on to? And I want you to go beyond belief. I want you to know. You know, if you know something, you don't believe in it, you know it. And that's really what the way Jesus lived. You know, I was in high school in the summer before my senior year in high school. I worked for a construction company, and they were demolishing some walls and some things inside of a school, a high school. And we went into this classroom to do this. And I looked at this classroom and I said, man, this thing's in perfect shape. I mean, the walls look great. The paint looks great. I mean, it looks like it actually, you know, they'd done some stuff to it in the last year or two. The problem was they needed it for atrium space. And it had been used as an English classroom. And so they had other classrooms they could do that in, but they needed this space because it was right next to the entrance. So they tore out the walls and they tore everything out, the flooring. They created an entry space expanded that entry space, the atrium space, so that they could get more kids coming in during the beginning and ends of the day. Was that space a good space in good order? Yeah, it was. But it wasn't what they needed. They needed to tear it down and then reconstruct it. Well, this is what it's like when it comes to deconstructing our faith. Is there anything necessarily wrong with it? No, it's just too small. It's not big enough for what God's doing. God's always doing more new and giving you things that you don't know anything about, that you're just not aware of. They're not new in the sense that they don't exist. They do. You just weren't aware of it. And so as he begins to give you new things, you start to look at your belief system and go, you know, I don't know if this really fits. If this is big enough for what it is that God's trying to show me. And so be willing to be open-minded enough that God can deconstruct that room, that theological room, and reconstruct it and make it bigger and make it a larger, more open-minded, more willing to listen, more humble, more focused, and see yourself beginning to grow and mature spiritually. Now, according to the Center for the Study of Global Christianity, Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, there are over 2.3 billion Christians today. So in a world of over 8 billion people, about 2.3 billion claim to be Christians, really all over the world. And Catholics, I'm putting a pie chart up here on the screen so you can see it. According to Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, Roman Catholic people who claim to be Roman Catholic make up about 805 million. I think that that number personally is larger than that. I think it's probably closer to a billion. The number has been coming down, though, over the years. So 805 million might be accurate, but it's somewhere in between 800 million and a billion. So Roman Catholics make up by far the greatest percentage of all Christians. Now, that's not surprising because we came out of the Catholic Church, if you're evangelical, or if you're Protestant or others. All of us, at some point, our tree goes down into the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church tree goes down into the early church. The early church tree, or the early church fathers, if you will, goes down into the early church and that down towards Paul and the apostles and that sort of thing. So that that group is by far the largest group. Now, Pentecostal and Charismatics, surprisingly to some, make up 18% of all believers, about 414 million people. And I would say the vast majority of those live in the Western Hemisphere, mostly in South America, Central America, some here in North America too, but not as many as down there, and also in Africa. So those individuals make up about 414 million. And then mainline Protestants make up about 18% as well, about 412 million. And this includes Methodists and Episcopalians and Presbyterians and that sort. That number has been declining over the years. The one group that's really increasing is Pentecostals and Charismatics. And I would think that this 414 million is probably larger than that. But they're growing dramatically. And of all these groups, that's the one group that's actually continuing to grow and has grown for many, many years. Mainline Protestants continue to decline, as do Catholics. Catholic churches continue to decline, although both of those have tended to slow down here recently. Evangelicals make up about 253 million, or around 11%. Now, many of the people who watch my show come from an evangelical background. This will be a lot of different groups. We'll get into that group here in a little bit. But evangelicals primarily are in the Western Hemisphere and in Africa and in Europe. So that's where you're going to find most evangelicals. And then the Orthodox Church, which is primarily in Greece and Russia and that part of the world, and Ukraine, they make up about 161 million people, around 7% of all Christians. That group has held pretty steady over the years. But again, they come out of the Catholic Church as well, and the Great Schism that occurred, I guess, almost 1,000 years ago. And so the rest are what we call other, because there's so many denominations just in that little piece, that 11%. I mean, there's literally thousands and thousands and thousands. And so they make up about 265 million. So the total is around 8 billion people, 2.3 billion people. And this is this chart, I think, is very eye-opening. It shows you how divided the Christian world is. I grew up in and pastored Southern Baptist churches. I went to a Southern Baptist seminary. Many of you probably already know this. And I graduated from there. My emphasis was in the biblical languages, so I could study those and read from them. It was also in pastoral leadership and pastoral counseling. So those were the things that I focused on when I got my master's degree, my MDiv. And I came out of there, and I thought my specific denomination was the whole world. Matter of fact, that's kind of how it was presented to us, is that, hey, we're the real deal here. We've got it down, and everyone else has got problems with their theology. Just trust us. And that's kind of what I heard from pulpit to pulpit, church to church. But my parents and I, we moved some, and every church we go to, this was kind of the same story. Every person who lives in a denomination lives in a religious bubble. You live in a religious bubble. Because what happens is we decide we're just going to live in that bubble. We're not going to expose ourselves to anything else. We're not going to be available to anything else. We're not going to open ourselves up to anything else, because we think if we do that, that we will be deceived, or we'll be misled, or we'll become a charismatic, or we'll speak in tongues, or who knows what might happen. Or we'll start dancing. God forbid you should dance, or you might start drinking. But I'm going to stay in my denominational bubble. They've got it right. They know what they're talking about, and that's generally what most religious people are at. Yet Southern Baptists only number around 14 million today. So out of nearly 2.3 billion people, Southern Baptists make up 14 million. And most of those, the vast majority of them, are in North America, the United States for the most part. And not only that, they're in the southeastern United States. Okay. And you don't find Southern Baptists, much outside of the United States. And here's the thing, 14 million out of 2.3 billion, that's less than 1% of all Christians. It's 0.59% of all Christians. Now, they're evangelicals. And what that means is they're very evangelistic. I will give them that. They have an entire department, an agency dedicated to sharing the gospel all over the world. Not just there, but also domestically in the United States. I mean, they are quite committed to that. And the churches I pastored and the churches I was in, we gave 10% of everything to do that. So they're very committed to that. But they're only 0.59 of 1%. So what that means is when they're living in a bubble of 0.59 of 1% of the total. Think about that. How can they possibly have the whole truth? Okay. And I was with a client who was Southern Baptist, evangelical, and he was like, talking about he's in this men's group and he learns a lot through this men's group and God's, changing his viewpoint and everything. And I said, yeah, for 0.59 of 1%, God's changing your viewpoint. Because everybody in that group's the same as you. They're all in the bubble too. And you're all, I'm not saying God's not showing him some things, he is, but he didn't realize, and it's opened his eyes that, hey, I really have been closed off to something new and different, to having my horizons expanded, to becoming more open-minded. And when I become more open-minded, I become much more available to the Spirit of God for him to do whatever it is he wants to do. Now, it takes a sizable amount of pride to believe that you have all the truth and that everyone else is wrong when you make up less than 1% of all Christianity. But that is the Christian denominational world today. That's where we're at. And there are over 45,000, now get this, 45,000 denominations in five very different groups. And they each believe that they have the truth. How could your small group within Christianity hold all the truth? Even here on the Grace Network, listen, I hope we never get to the point that we become so closed-minded and our focus is on dogma that people can't just be who they are, be themselves. Here's the thing, there's not a whole lot to believe. When it comes to Jesus, he was all about love, feeding the poor, taking care of people, being honest, being real, being authentic. He wasn't into memorizing scripture. In fact, the church didn't have any scriptures for 400 years. And so there weren't any scriptures to memorize. He said, what about the Old Testament? Most of them couldn't read. Even if they did have the Old Testament, they couldn't read it. All they had was their spirit. So they had to go to their spirit if they wanted to know anything about Jesus. And the thing is that if you go to a book and you make the book your focal point, and you're going to break up into a lot of denominational groups. And not only that, you're going to be so divided that you can't ever really come together, agree on anything. But don't you know that the one thing that Jesus was focused on was love, and really two things: love your neighbor as yourself, love your neighbor as yourself, and then do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Here's the thing: when you live by your spirit, that's the easy way to live. When you live by spirit, all you have to do is ask yourself a question: what does it mean to love my neighbor in this situation? And then turn it around. In this situation, how would I want somebody to treat me? What would I want? That's it. You see, the problem with that is that that doesn't allow for professional clergy. It doesn't allow for more denominations. It leads people to live from their spirit. But if you've got a book, then okay, now you got to have people to explain it. And then if you got people to explain it, then you got to pay them a salary. And if you pay them a salary, there's got to be organizations. You see, it just builds on itself. But Jesus never did that. Jesus didn't come start a religion. There is not a Christian religion as far as Jesus is concerned. There is simply our union in the divine life. There is his finished work in us and us in him. All right, that's all there is. Nothing else. And Jesus simply said, hey, love your neighbor as you love yourself. But I find that most Christians don't love who they are. They've been taught to hate themselves. And therefore, they're not very good candidates for loving other people who aren't like them, who don't act like they do, who don't look like they do. And then when it comes to treating people the way you'd want to be treated, that really requires something of you. That could require to get outside your box, love people that aren't like you. It would mean possibly sacrificing. And this is the thing that Jesus was about, and that's why they called people followers of the way. Because the Pharisees didn't do that. The religious leaders of that day didn't do that. They lived by rules and laws and condemned everybody else, which is basically what the church does today, unfortunately. rules and laws and condemning everybody that doesn't live up to it. You see, that was never part of the plan. And unfortunately, things got off track pretty quick. Before you knew it, there was churches, and then there were laws and dogma and priests and just on and on. And then women were subjugated and misogynistic tendencies began. You see, none of that was what Jesus was about. None of it. And here's the thing. You have to ask yourself, have I ever considered that my small denominational group does not hold all the truth? And am I willing to change my mind? Would I deconstruct what I believe? Would I reexamine my faith? Would I look at it from the lens of the eyes of love? Now, this is hard to hear, but your denomination, my denomination, be it Southern Baptist, Presbyterian, Charismatic, Pentecostal, Evangelical Free Church, or even Catholic, whoever you are associated with does not have all the truth. They do not have a monopoly on the truth. Okay, they just don't. I was in a group some years ago with some believers, and I remember it was when I was writing my second book, and I was doing some beta testing of the material. And so we got together with the group, and I was teaching it. And one of the things I asked them, I said, how many of you are willing to consider that what you believe in regards to the Bible, some of that could potentially be wrong? And no one raised their hand, not one person. I said, okay, let me ask it a different way. Is it possible that you are believing something that is not absolutely the truth? And nobody would raise their hand. Now, why do they do that? Is it pride? Yeah, it's spiritual pride. That's part of it. Part of it is because that's the way they were taught. We have the truth. We're right. We know the Bible. See, God blesses us. Can't you see? We're right. Even my parents, I used to ask them, why don't we go to Southern Baptist Church? He says, well, we think they're the closest to the truth of the Bible. You know what would have been a better answer? They just love people. I mean, they just love people. I don't know what it is. They just love people. D.L. Moody tells a story when he was a young man. There was a little boy who was coming to the church that he was at, and he was walking a long ways to get there, I mean miles, to come to this church. And he was probably about 10 or 12. You know, in those days you could do that. And this was in the late 1800s. And he took the boy aside, and he said, listen, why are you walking so far to this church? I mean, there's a lot of churches that you could go to, but you walk all the way to come to this church, to our church. Why are you doing that? And he looked at him and he said, well, it just seems like they love a fella at this church more than they do the others. You see, it's not about what you believe. The little boy didn't care about that. People care that you love them, that you accept them, that you receive them as they are. People know genuine, authentic love. They know it when they feel it and see it and experience it. It's really the language. It's the second language that we all speak. We all have our mother tongue, and then we have, if you will, our internal tongue, which is love. Everyone knows the language of love, and it's always expressed in what we do. It's an action. And this is what's important. You get your theology wrong, that's okay. Because nobody has theirs completely right. Not me, not you, no one. And that's all right. Because you're not trusting your view and study of a book. You're trusting your union and divine oneness in Christ Jesus, in the divine life. That's what you're trusting. You're trusting that you're one spirit with the divine. And that spirit will not let you down. It's never let me down, and it never will. I've always gotten what I need, when I need it, the way I need it. I've always received the knowledge I need, intuitively know what to do. Do I read the Bible? Yes, I do. But the Bible is Jesus' slave, not his master. And now it's become my slave, my servant. The Bible doesn't tell me how to act or do anymore. The Bible is simply there as a tool for Jesus, for the Spirit that lives within me. And everything I need, I go here. And then as I go inward, what God can do is take me outward to a book or take me outward to something else and say, hey, I don't want you to read this. But go inward first. Inward to the life of Christ within you, to your life in him, his life in you. Now, unfortunately, some teachings are based on centuries of tradition rather than a dynamic theology and a willingness to change and grow spiritually. You know, and if you go and stay in the same theological box all your life, have you really grown? If you're not learning something new all the time, are you really growing? Well, what keeps us from doing that is not being open, not having an open mind, not being open to a new perspective, a new way of seeing something. You know, when Jesus came, everything he was talking about was new to them. They were used to the law and being beaten down by it. Jesus comes and says, in me you find life. Come to me, I'll give you life. I'll take care of your burdens. Lay those down at my feet. That was a new thing, man. They never heard that before. And he said, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. I'm not going to put any more yokes on you like the Pharisees do, like the religious people do, like the law does. I'm actually going to live in and with you so that you'll never again have to worry about that. This was new teaching. But if they didn't have an open mind, they could never receive it. Many of them couldn't. Even the disciples struggled with it. But that is the road to greater, if you will, awareness spiritually, greater fruitfulness, greater consciousness, Christ consciousness, if you will. That's the road, and being open-minded and willing to receive those new things. Theology is not static in any way, and God cannot be put into a theological box, no matter how many times your pastor told you all revelation is final. I mean, all you have to do is look at the Old Covenant and the New Covenant and the Bible, and you can see from where Abraham was at to where Jesus was at in their day, what they understood about God was completely different. It was completely different. I mean, they understood something completely different than Abraham did. Now, Abraham had a very deep experience with God, as did Moses, as did David, as did Solomon. But here's the thing. Their relationship with God was one way, and the relationship of those in the New Testament was another. What do we call that? Progressive revelation. It's progressive revelation. God shares revelation with us as we can handle it, as we need it, for the time in which we live. And that is happening today. Listen, the Reformers' beliefs were not entirely those of the Council of Nicaea, which met in 325 CE. They varied. And the opinions of many Pentecostals differ from that of Martin Luther. And the same can be said, if you will, for Southern Baptists. A willingness to honestly examine your theology and doctrine with an open mind and heart to the leading of the Spirit within you is what matters. Okay? What I look at and believe is not what the Reformers believed. Now, they believed in Scripture alone, grace alone, and faith alone, right? And so I believe those things, but I also believe that the book is important, but I think there's something more important. That's Christ in me. And that's what I focus on. You refuse to give in, if you will, to the control of fear rather than the freedom that comes from knowing that you are loved unconditionally by God above all else. It's when you come to that point that you realize I am unconditionally loved and I can trust that God who loves me unconditionally. The Spirit will lead me, will guide me, will keep me on the path. And when I get off, get me back on the path. I don't need to worry about that. He'll teach me to listen. He'll get my attention. He'll do everything that's needed. My job is to listen. Just listen. Just keep listening. Listen in spirit. And all that's needed, which lives within you, is yours. Now, a willingness to do this is a sign of spiritual maturity. It's a sign of spiritual maturity. Now, the Apostle Paul made this clear in his writings. And if you look at, and I'll put it up there, 1 Corinthians 3:1-2 said this. Paul said, I, brothers, could not address you as spiritual people, but as people of the flesh, as infants in Christ. I fed you with milk, not solid food, for you were not ready for it. And even now, you're not yet ready. So what he's saying here, he says, the brother says, listen, I don't treat you as spiritual people. The word there for spiritual people has the ideal of spirit. In other words, it is pneumata, a pneumatological person, a person who is a spiritual person. They are in touch with, if you will, in alignment with their spirit. He said, I couldn't treat you like people like that. He said, I had to treat you rather as people of the flesh, which is sarcos. And his point here being is, and if you want, you can think of that as the ego. His point is that I had to treat you as people who are focused on their flesh, on their mind unredeemed, if you will, in Christ, the mind that still has that old worldly way of thinking, that's confused about itself, about God and other people. I have to treat you that way because you just continue to go back to your flesh to try and figure out spiritual things, and that doesn't work. He said, I fed you with milk, not solid food. You feed infants milk. Not adults. Adults, you feed solid food. For you were not ready for it, and even now you're not ready. So, boy, this is an honest letter that he wrote to. He's really kind of getting in their face here a little bit. And he's saying, listen, you're just infants. You're not even spiritual people. You think based on soulless terms. In other words, you think based on things other than within your spirit. You don't know how to go within. The flesh only knows how to look outside itself. It's looking towards books and people and events and material things and money, everything, hoping that that will somehow help the interior person and the problems they feel in the inner person, make them a more Christian person, if you will, a more spiritual person. It will never work. You only go inward first. Go to your spirit, because there you will find the life of Christ living within you. All that you need by the grace of God is now, this moment within you, and this writing that Paul gave is evidence of that. So in 1 Corinthians 2:14-15, he says, the fleshly person does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are folly to him. Why? Because the fleshly person is focused on fleshly things, outer things, the body, the things outside the body. Those are the things that consumes the fleshly individual. So they don't really understand the things of the inner person, the inner spirit. We're going to talk more about this as we go forward. And to them, it's folly. I mean, it seems stupid. It seems idiotic. Why would you go inward to receive outward? No. To them, you go outward to receive inward. And he is not able to understand because they are spiritually discerned. Why? Everything of spirit is discerned by spirit. So if you're going to receive other things inward, you must discern from them by that inward spirit. So that is the focal point. The spiritual person judges all things, but is himself to be judged by no one. What does that mean? It means that the spiritual person has the ability to look at any given situation and by the Spirit of God, the intuitive knowing, understand that situation. And then in doing so, make a decision or do whatever they need to do. Well, the fleshly person will look at that and go, that's just stupid. Why would you do that? And they'll judge it. But they, what Paul's saying is nobody who is fleshly can judge a spiritual person because they don't understand. They don't have the knowledge. They don't have the intuitive wisdom. They're not receiving of the Spirit to even be able to judge it. And so the spiritual person, matter of fact, won't even judge what they're doing. They'll just go and do what they feel intuitively they're supposed to do and move on, knowing that fleshly people will judge them, worldly people will judge them. And these people, they claim to be believers. And I believe they were, because this is where most believers are at. Why? Because this is how we live when we are unwilling to go inward and let God deconstruct what we believe, bring an open-mindedness so that we can receive the Spirit of God in a much greater way. And final, I want to say, let the Spirit who lives within you be your guide to teach, instruct, and awaken you to truths you've been unaware of. That's really all we're talking about. We're just going to awaken. We just want to wake up, just awaken out of sleep, out of spiritual sleep. Let's awaken and let God reveal to us that which we have yet to really understand or see. He so much wants to do that. Let him reveal how to apply those things. Then in your union in Christ, work with him to decipher what he is developing within you so that you may live at a higher level of consciousness, Christ consciousness in him each moment. See, we want to go from a sin consciousness to a Christ consciousness, from a focus outwardly to a focus inwardly. That is how you thrive in life. You thrive by living consciously, inwardly from the Spirit, Christ's life, your life. That's how you thrive in life. And you must go inward to do that. Person who thrives lives from within. That's the key. Finally, I'll say this. You need not be afraid of being misled. A lot of what I'm sharing is going to be new. I'm going to show us all kinds of different things from what's called special revelation, like the Bible, and general revelation, such as quantum science, the stars, astronomy, if you will, anthropology, study of man, geology, study of the things in this geological world. There's going to be a lot of things that are going to be beneficial to us. But here's the thing. Everything we study, everything, this is my promise, everything we study comes from God. Okay? Everything we will study and look at comes from God. Scientists may be the ones who discovered it. Medical scientists may be the ones who discovered it. Astronomers may have been the ones to open it up. God created it. And it speaks to us as much as the Bible does. We must have both. We must have both. We must be balanced, and we must let both lead us forward. Will you join me on this journey? If you're willing to do that, it will be a tremendous benefit to you, and you'll begin to learn